Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is, almost, well, nope, every single week. That's right. I did the math. It's Drea Kaufman.
Yeah. No, you don't record. We don't do this without me. I would just be Matt talking to himself.
And that, you know, I do enough of that on my own. So, you know.
I don't feel like anyone needs that recorded, Matt.
Oh, man. Well, super exciting. Since the last time we recorded, you know, Thanksgiving happened and then life happened. So, I want to thank everybody for being patient. It's just that way. But we've had a ton of new reviews over there on the old Apple podcast. So wanted to read them out and thank everybody for that. One's from Z Barn. It says, amazing podcast. It said, this podcast is amazing. I listen to it while I'm writing and working on school assignments. The books are awesome, but the podcast helps me to understand the books a little better than before. Listening to this also brings back memories of when I was reading the books for the first time. Great work.
Always love that. That's so cool.
I know. I'm all like, oh, over here, which nobody can hear. That's not a sound.
Yeah. But, no, and it's great because I have a friend of mine who is actually, she borrowed the books from me and she had never read them and she's reading them right now. And she's in the fourth book and really enjoying it. So that's been, it's just my favorite thing to be able to introduce Harry Potter to people. So we got another one from Marek. So I think that's correct. 2431. They said, great podcast, 5 stars. The hosts do a great job of discussing each chapter and making connections to the other books while still avoiding spoilers. 5 stars. Thank you so much.
Which is hard. I will give us props for that one. Avoiding, especially how she kind of world builds. Mm-hmm. It's particularly hard because you want to spoil it and you like really can't.
Yeah.
Well, they will spoil it. And that's the whole point.
And I know people have gotten on us, you know, in different reviews, the fact that we don't do that. But, you know, we've legitimately gotten plenty of emails from people who are reading the books for the first time along with us. So, you know, it's. We could have done the podcast completely differently, but you know, we chose one way and we tried to stick with it so that people can enjoy it. And I think, you know, honestly, I get as much talking about things even without everything that we could say. So, and I've read them multiple times. So,
well, and we try to circle back when it's no longer spoiling it to things that are relevant from the past. So hopefully we're still getting all those connections mm-hmm. that you guys are looking for. They're just later on in the series. And, you know, here in the next couple of months, we'll be wrapping up entirely in the next, 5 or 6 months, I think we're done.
Well, I mean, even less than that, because we only have 12 episodes left, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. We're very close.
Yeah. So we'll have crossed all those T's and dotted all those I's by the time we're all said and done. So, you know, I think we have a lot of listeners reading along who are not just their first time, but their children, right? Their families reading this together. So, one, I have to continue to watch my mouth, which is impressive. I've been able to do it as long as I have. And two, you know, we really don't want to spoil it for them because part of the magic of the series is making those connections yourself. Yep. And if we go and ruin that for them, then, you know, they don't have that moment of elation when they put those puzzle pieces together and, you know, get to experience that themselves. So I think that was something we talked about was really important to us. And we really appreciate that it's, you know, it's for the most part well received. But we're always willing to talk those theories on all the social media sites. So keep hitting us up.
Well,
there,
and not only that, but, you know, just as an example, first time Harry Potter reader, 5 stars. Casey Lee 4TS says, I finally decided to read the Harry Potter books. Having listened to other podcasts hosted by Matthew, I'd figured I'd give this one a shot too. I'm listening along as I read the books for the first time. I've seen the movies several times. Matthew and Drea clearly love these books, and that makes these a joy to listen to as I read each chapter. So, you know, absolutely. It's just, that's the, you know, that's the world we live in. There are people, it's like, you know, I know it's hard to believe, but I still run into people who have never seen Star Wars. So, you know, it's just that it makes it fun. The next review says, love you guys. 5 stars, Thaisa Simmons. I just started listening to the podcast 2 weeks ago and I'm caught up and I'm loving it. So that's, wow. I love,
wow, that's impressive.
Really impressive. They said, I love the perspective you guys have. I love that you give Harry a break. He's my favorite character. Unpopular opinion. Interesting. I wouldn't call it, I don't know if I call that unpopular, but maybe it is. And
I see that.
I think fans don't cut him enough slack. Keep up the great work. I can definitely see where there are plenty of times, especially like maybe in book 5 or whatever, where that happens. But yes, we love Harry and we're here to cut him all the slack. So
yes.
This one says 5 stars. It's from, I think, L. Raymond. I think that's an L. I can't tell if it's an L or an I because lowercase I... uppercase I and lowercase L look the same all the time. So anyway, it says, I'm 12 years old and I'm obsessed with Harry Potter so much that it annoys my parents. It's great listening to people in other Hogwarts houses talk about Harry Potter. I'm a Slytherin and I love this podcast. Thank you so much for making it. And you are absolutely welcome. You do not have to be a Ravenclaw to listen to this podcast.
Oh my gosh, I love all of that. Also, keep up with the loving something so hard it annoys your parents.
Yes, yes.
Because I think that's great. And as a parent, I hope my daughter grows up to love something so much that, I mean, she is. She loves Frozen and Scooby-Doo more than anything on the planet. So I keep at it.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
Well, I did get a message from a listener here, Drea, on Instagram, and I wanted to share it. It said, hello, Matt and Drea. My name is Terry, and I'm from the Philippines. My friend Karina really got me into Owl Post earlier this year and pretty much binged it over the quarantine. My 9-year-old Slytherin daughter Stella and I love it so much. She recently got into Harry Potter 2, and it's such a delight to share with her. I just wanted to thank you for all the joy you brought us over this difficult year and for helping us keep the magic alive. All the best, Terry and Stella, and we are so thankful that we have made your quarantine. So it has definitely been a tough year for everybody, but it's very exciting to us that we've had any part in bringing joy to people. That's awesome.
Definitely hit me in the feels. A little teary.
Yeah, I, you know. Oh, is it dusty in here? All right.
I'm not crying. I'm just allergic to jokes.
Yeah, I'm just
on the
allergic
internet.
To. Awesome. So, well, if you want to contact us, we would love to hear from you. You can catch us all over the place. You can find the show on Twitter at Join Nerd Party with the rest of the Nerd Party. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. You can leave us a review in Apple Podcasts and we'll read that out. We really appreciate all the people that have been doing that over the years, and it's pretty awesome that people continue to leave us reviews and help the show grow. You can find us at thenerdparty.com, and you can send us an email there over thenerdparty.com/contact. So all of those places are places you can find us. Thank you for bearing with us, but we wanted to make sure that everybody got thanked for their reviews because it means so much to us. But we are at chapter 24 now, Drea, the Wand Maker, and man, I've read this chapter twice now, and it still gets me as they get back and Harry is having to deal with, you know, obviously the death of Dobby. And it's just so heartbreaking to, you know, watch him, you know, they get everybody inside. They get Hermione inside. They're making sure that everybody's getting healed. And Harry is having this moment of saying, I want to bury him and I don't want to use magic. And he uses that moment as the ability to kind of like process what's happened, you know? And I love it too, because it's also that moment where he finally realizes he knows how to block Voldemort out of his mind. And that is with love. That is with, you know, this love that he's feeling for Dobby is just so much that it pushes Voldemort and what's happening with Voldemort out of his mind. It's so beautiful.
Well, he actually calls it grief. He says he's finally figured out what's going to block Voldemort, and that's this intense feeling of grief.
Right.
And he has this conversation in his head with, well, Dumbledore would say it's love, but I'm just so grief-stricken right now that everything else gets shut out.
Yep.
And I think it's important to note that the two are so intermingled, right? Like the fact that he's feeling so much grief is because of how much love he had, right? So I think it's just kind of amazing to go through that and experience that. And I think it, as we go through the chapter, it's even more apparent beyond his ability to sort of use occlumency to others around how much he truly cared about Dobby and how kind of true to his character what he does in the, you know, for the first part of this chapter is, and really resonates with other people who are watching.
Yeah.
He doesn't even realize anybody's watching, right? And this really just speaks to him at his truest, mm-hmm. and that he is pure of heart, even with no sort of tangible exchange, right? Like, this is not a quid pro quo thing. This is just, he wants to do the right thing, the thing that feels right to him deep down.
Well, and I think what's so beautiful is it connects all the way back to the fifth book, right? Where, you know, when he sees his friends and Voldemort's trying to possess them and Voldemort can't because of this love that Harry is feeling for Ron and Hermione. And this is the exact reason why love here is also, you know, pushing Voldemort out. And yes, it is grief in response to love. I mean, why we grieve is because we love, you know, and it is, again, something to which Voldemort has no idea how to handle. And that's why his mind can have no part of Harry's when these type of feelings are happening. And it is just a beautiful moment. And as Harry is, you know, digging this, he's thinking about, you know, he's able to detach. Like, he knows that he's gone to this cell in Nuremberg. But he's also still just processing this idea that, you know, like Wormtail, he's dead because he had one small impulse of mercy. You know, had Dumbledore foreseen that? Like, how much more did he know? And I love that, like, Ron and Dean come out. And Harry's thinking he's going to have to tell them, like, why he's not doing this with magic. And I love that they just get there and they're like, do you have extra spades? And they just help him dig this grave for Dobby. And it's a really beautiful moment. I think it's a moment of, like, catharsis for all of them. Everything that they've been through, you know, there's nothing better than just kind of, like, working with your hands and allowing the pain in that way of working with your hands, the blisters you get when you're not used to that kind of labor, allowing that to kind of work out the suffering that you're going through inside. So it's just a really beautiful moment. And I think it's a really powerful moment because it helps us remember that it's okay to grieve. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to work through these feelings, and you have to work through these feelings and by legitimizing them. So I think I think she's doing a real favor to people to see this, that this is something that people need to take time to do.
Yeah, I think, and I love, the more I sit with it, the more I think about it, the more I sort of just enjoy that moment, the more I really appreciate her tying it back to love as well. Because I think too often we get caught up in this idea of grief as a sad thing, right? We're sad, right? But I think the more you tie that back to why you're sad and why you're grieving, it makes it beautiful, mm-hmm. and something that you should respect and make time and space for, and not something that's to be embarrassed about or something that, I don't know, like something that just doesn't deserve your time and attention, right? Like, if you remember why you're grieving, it helps to let you give yourself permission to work through the process.
Yeah.
And I think that's what she's doing here, right? She's giving Harry permission. She's giving all these characters this opportunity, even with something as you could argue as small as a house elf, right? She's showing there's nothing too small, nothing too inconsequential. You know, we're not watching the death of some of the other major characters we'll see later in the book. Yeah, spoilers there. Sorry, guys, people die. But there's so much to it. And I do love the idea that, you have to kind of fill the space with that. I like your assessment of, you know, the catharsis of manual labor and things like that. It's the same reason why people have shower epiphanies and right. stuff like that. It frees your mind and allows you to be in the moment. So it's quite beautiful. And they go inside to kind of check in on see how Hermione's doing and the others are doing. And they, you know, have an opportunity to kind of talk to Bill and Fleur. And it's pretty quick and they get right back into it and back sort of on mission, if you will.
Yeah. And I like before that, though, you know, they have the funeral. And I really love that it's Luna who is the one who kind of takes charge of this, because people are kind of struggling with, even Harry, just like, what do I say? What do I do? And I love that, you know, she closes his eyes. So, and she's like, now it would look, just looks like it's sleeping. And then she's the one who thanks Dobby for coming to rescue them and for being there for them. And it's a beautiful little scene. And then, like you said,
Well, and at the end of the funeral, he marks the grave yep. marker like he saw in the graveyards
yep.
at Godric's Hollow, right? And I love his comment of, you know, I bet Hermione could do it better,
mm-hmm.
but this is what, like, this is it. Like, this fulfills it for me. Like, he did it. It was probably slow and messy, yep. but he doesn't care because to him, it's the thought that counts.
Well, so. And to do that, he picks from the two wands that he stole. He totally forgot that he had wrestled these two wands away, and he uses the one that feels friendlier to him, and he points it at the rock, and he has this beautiful epigraph of, "Here lies Dobby, a free elf," and it's so beautiful. And then I, like you said, I love how, you know, he walks to the house. He doesn't want to get the house dirty. He's got some muddy boots, and so he's just listening to the conversations. And we learn that, you know, it's lucky, obviously, that Ginny is on holiday. You know, if she had been at Hogwarts, this could have gone really badly. And that basically the entire Weasley family is hiding in Aunt Muriel's now because they can't be at the Burrow because people know, you know. And so now Aunt Muriel's and the Shell Cottage here are protected by the Fidelius charm, and it's not like they can go to work, but it doesn't really matter at this point. All that matters is that people are safe. And luckily, too, you know, they're going to be able to move, like, Mr. Ollivander and Grip Hook once they're well enough to travel. You know, they're not quite well enough for that. And it's just, it's really beautiful. And you know, there's this moment too where Harry has a thought of, like, you know, Dobby would never be able to tell them who came to save them, but he knew from the mirror fragment and that piercing blue eye that help will always be given to those who ask at Hogwarts. And for him, he's, you know, believing in somehow this is Dumbledore. And so still raising that question of what exactly is going on there. And at the same time, I love Harry realizing, you know, he knows what Voldemort's going to do. He knows where Voldemort's going. He knows what the process is. And it says, you know, he's thinking, you know, you gave Ron the Deluminator. You knew that he would need a way back. You know, you understood Wormtail. You knew that there was regret there. But what did you know about me? You know, did you know that I should know and that I shouldn't go find? Do you know how hard that is? Like, he's having all of these thoughts in his head about how difficult this is. And this is the moment where he makes the decision on what he's going to do. Like, because he knows where Voldemort's going. He knows what Voldemort's doing, and he's not going to try and stop him.
And it's nice that they sort of have two people who represent the choices, mm-hmm. right? They have Grip Hook, who represents the Horcruxes, and they have Ollivander, who represents the Deathly Hallows, right? And it's kind of like he's standing in that old Robert Frost poem, and he's looking down the two paths, and he can't, you know, he has to decide which is more important. Does yep. he go for the one that's sort of guts and glory with the Hallows, or does he follow what he thinks Dumbledore would tell him to do, which is the Horcruxes,
yes.
right? Even though that one's the, in this case, path less traveled. He doesn't know as much. He doesn't have, it's harder. He doesn't know how many or where they are or what they are or anything like that. And, you know, he has to make this choice. And it's not even really reluctant. It's more like he sort of makes it almost in the way that a kid makes a decision to eat their peas on their dinner table, even though they don't want to. They know it's the right choice. Fine, I'll go do the Horcruxes, right? Like, he does the right thing a little begrudgingly, like a little bit, but he still makes what we think of as, you know, mm-hmm. the right choice here. The least tempting one, right?
Yeah. No, and I think it's interesting too, because, you know, Bill is wanting to know what's going on, and Harry's like, look, I can't tell you, but I need to talk to Griphook, and I need to talk to Ollivander, and I need to do it now. And the Fleur is like, no, you can't. And he's like, no, I need to do this. And Bill gives in, you know, Bill understands. And I love that they talk to Griphook first. And, you know, Griphook is sitting there clutching the sword of Gryffindor as they have this entire conversation. And I really love that, you know, Griphook, he talks about, I mean, he keeps bringing up this idea of how unusual Harry is for a wizard, the way that he treated the elf who just died, the way that he's treated goblins. You know, Harry brings up the fact, you know, I don't know if you remember. And he's like, no, I remember. I was the first person to show you at your vault and Gringotts. And so he keeps bringing up, though, is that Harry is just this very odd, strange wizard. And Harry says, look, I have a request of you that is going to be really difficult, and I need to break into a Gringotts vault.
And I love, I mean, here is what, when we were talking about our lead in and our intro and our thank yous, like, here is one of those big connections, right? We're going all the way back to like the first half of the first book. Not only does he remember Griphook, which is kind of shocking because, you know, he could very well have thought it was any other goblin who helped him, right? But no, he remembered. He also remembered that someone broke in to Gringotts the same time that he went there, all the way back to that very first book of The Sorcerer of the Philosopher's Stone, depending on which version you read. You know, we have some deep throwbacks here. This is some OG Harry Potter stuff right here. You know, and he kind of, I like how he keeps saying, well, you know, if it's a lower security vault, it would be, not going to be the case. Like, he just kind of shuts him down, like, nope, it's going to be hard. It's probably going to be impossible, but we need to do it anyway. It was sort of this just acceptance.
Well, and like you said, reminding him, no, it's been done before. Like,
yep.
Yeah, we've been there, and we remember it because we know what was stolen out of the vault. So
yeah, he didn't have to say, but he's like, yep, we know. And we know that that couldn't have been a low security vault based on what was in there.
Well, and so, and I love too that, you know, Griphook talks about the idea of, why should we help you? Why should we help a wizard? You know, you wizards have kept us, you know, goblins been able to use wands for years. And I love that, you know, Hermione comes to the aid here, and she's like, you're not the only one who's looked down upon. I'm just as looked down upon you as anyone. I'm a mudblood. And I love Ron's like, don't call yourself that. And she's like, no, why shouldn't I? I'm taking pride now in that who I am. Did you not hear how I was tortured at the Malfoys? And did you not know that it was Harry who set Dobby free in the first place? Did you not know that we've been fighting for, well, Hermione's been fighting for elf rights for years, you know, and I just love it. And there's this beautiful moment where Griphook is looking at them and he says, so young to be fighting for so many. And it's dawning on him that these kids might be his last best hope.
Yeah. It's fascinating because, you know, Hermione leans into this idea of mudblood the same way so many other marginalized groups in society, be it, you know, blacks or women, have leaned into derogatory terms in the past themselves, right? Fine, I'm going to take it. I'm going to make it stronger. I'm going to make it just, I'm not going to spend my energy fighting what you call me. Let's do it, right? And she sort of drops all pretenses. And it's not like her to be so, like, outspoken about something like this. Clearly what happened to her at Malfoy Manor has changed her and her approach to how she's going to be in this trio now, like, in a good way.
Yep.
Right. She's more emboldened now. She's gonna go in guns a blazing to everything. And I do love that Griphook never really truly acknowledges that what they're doing is good for him, but the idea that these are barely adults, if they are adults, I think they're 17 at this point, are kind of the last hope for anyone who's not a pureblood wizard in this magical universe. So it's sort of that one that sits with you a little bit, right? It's the heavy phrase that, like, whew, okay, here we go. You know, they have to then decide what do we do next.
Well, and it's interesting too, because what they want to steal and where they want to steal it is from the Lestrange's vault. And
right. But they don't know what it is.
Right.
They just know, yep, they'll know it when they see it.
Yep. Well, and that's the beauty of what he says to them. You know, he says to Griphook, I'm sure you've seen things in that vault. And this is where he's like, can you trust that I don't want anything from this vault? I don't want to take anything for personal reasons. And this is where Griphook says, you know, of any wizard, I would trust that you don't want this for personal gain. Like, that you right. want this for good.
And, I'm not trying to steal right. riches. I'm not trying to, right. I'm literally trying to steal something that will help everyone and yep. not just me.
Well, and I think there's the beauty in that too, of that, you know, when they're talking about this after they leave the room, when Griphook says that he'll think about it, Harry's saying, look, I know it has to be there. I mean, why do you think Bellatrix would be so terrified when she thought we'd been in there? And this is a place that, this is exactly the type of place that, you know, Voldemort would have never had access to. And he would have been jealous of anybody who could have had access to this place. And therefore, to be able to have anything in there, it would have vindicated him as a person, it would have made him feel more like a wizard. And I really love that Ron's like, man, you're really starting to understand him. And he's like, bits of him. I just wish I understood Dumbledore as much.
Yeah, it's, I don't even know if it's so much like you're starting. I think he says, you really do understand him, don't you? Because it's not even that he's starting to. It's now I feel like Ron's turned a corner to trusting Harry and his judgment in this area, right? Like,
yep.
It may not make sense to him. It may not make sense to Hermione. It may not make sense to anybody, but that doesn't matter. If it makes sense to Harry, it's probably some form of the reality, yeah. right? And I do love, because they also call out here, you know, as we're talking about Dobby a little bit, the second book too, in that, you know, he gave Lucius the diary.
Yep.
He didn't tell him what it is. He just told him it was a prized possession, and that was enough. And that turned out to be one of the most prized possessions that Voldemort had. So, I mean, he kind of equates that to the same. Like, he probably gave Bellatrix something and told her it was a prized possession. And, you know, because her and her husband were some of the most loyal followers he had. And I find it interesting because this is also one of the first call-outs to Bellatrix's husband, who's completely left out of the movies. But apparently she has a husband, or had a husband. I'm guessing had, because we never see or hear of him. But... So he goes, you know, I don't know what it is, but when I see it, I'll know. And I love that he kind of has enough confidence to just say, once we get in there, I'm sure we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree that I think it's so cool just to see that happen. And one of the things too, is that now they're ready to talk to Ollivander. And it's really an interesting conversation, because the first question that Harry asks is, he hands his broken wand to him and asks if he can fix it. And of course the answer, and Harry was expecting this, which is that wand, his original wand, his Holly and Phoenix, tail wand, is there is no way to fix this that Ollivander knows of.
Yeah, but and from what we know of Ollivander from all of our books historically, there's probably not a way to fix it. He's a little devastated, but it, you know, like you said, he was expecting it. And then he goes on to ask about the other two wands he picked up that you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the grave marker, and says, you know, well, if I won these, are they safe to use? Which, you know, what are they? Whose are they? And he describes those two wands that he had.
Yeah, I mean, and this is really fascinating to me, learning about these wands. Is one, we learn that we've got the wand of Bellatrix Lestrange, who is walnut and dragon heartstring, and it is unyielding in its flexibility. And then we have this Hawthorne wand with unicorn hair, and it's actually quite springy in its flexibility. And we learn that wand, and it's the wand of Draco Malfoy. And so we learn that wands can change masters if they are won in a duel or taken away, and that one does not have to die to gain control of a wand for a wand to change allegiance. And what I love is we get into this whole idea of like wands and why they choose the wizard, and that wands themselves almost have a personality in the sense that they want to learn and they want to grow. And one of the reasons that they choose somebody is for that mutual quest of experience, learning from the wizard and the wizard learning from the wand. And so this is what creates that relationship. And I think to me it was just so fascinating to be able to finally kind of dive into how these things work in the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, and you know, he talks about that, you know, that's also where we start to get a little bit into the Hallows. But it is really interesting because, you know, he also brings up, so there's kind of two main things they talk about after one lore in general, and one of which is the Hallows, right? Which kind of goes along the lines of what you were saying about you don't have to kill to take ownership or allegiance of a wand, but that historically there's a wand in particular that's sort of the legacy of the wand. And then the other thing is we talk about the pairing between Harry and Voldemort's wands.
Yes, and this is the place where we learn that, yes, Harry's wand did do something very strange.
On its own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even Ollivander could not tell him what it was that happened. It was completely unexpected that his wand would snap the other wand. And so we also transition to talking about the idea of the Death Stick or the Wand of Destiny and the Elder Wand and the fact that Voldemort is now looking for this wand, and Ollivander confirms that that's the case, and Hermione is just flabbergasted. Literally flabbergasted that this is actually a thing, because of course we remember.
But this is a real thing because she thought it was all made up. She thought it was all a fairy tale.
Yep.
Sorry, I got really excited there.
Oh, it's so, I mean, it's great. Well, and we also learn too that, you know, obviously the Dark Lord would be seeking this because he would know, he's going to know that that Harry's wand is broken, because Harry's wand, or that Hermione's wand and the Blackthorn wand that they had been using, they'll be able to use prior incantatum to see what spells that they have created and in the recent past, and they'll know that Harry had tried to fix his wand with Hermione's and that it wasn't possible. It's also really interesting too, because we talk about the idea of whether or not, you know, the Elder Wand has to be gained by murder, and you know, that wouldn't necessarily have to be the case, although of course it has been in its history. And, you know, there's this moment where Harry realizes that that first time he met Ollivander, he wasn't quite sure about him. And here we kind of see that for Ollivander, the thought of Voldemort having the wand, that there is something attractive about that because of just seeing what could be possible between that wizard and that wand, because it's so powerful. And that kind of freaks Harry out a little bit, which makes sense. But we learn the history of this wand a little bit, and that, of course, Grigorovich had bragged about having the wand, and that he had lost it somehow. And that, you know, after that, Ollivander had no idea who had it. And the last interesting question that Harry asks is about whether or not he knows anything about the Deathly Hallows. And Ollivander doesn't know anything about the Deathly Hallows, which is very interesting, especially when it comes to the fact that, you know, the Elder Wand is fabled to be this wand. And that's the end of the questioning. And what we get next is a really interesting conversation between Ron, Harry, and Hermione, where he kind of explains why he's been asking all of these questions and what this all means for what's going on at this very moment with Voldemort.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's almost like this wand in Ollivander's mind has its own legacy in history known as the Death Stick, right? And then Harry has connected the fact that this Death Stick is actually the Elder Wand from the Deathly Hallows, right? Like he's working with maybe a full deck of cards and Ollivander's only looking at the hand he was dealt. And it's interesting because he connects those dots and us as readers are able to connect those dots pretty easily too. Almost to the point where you're like, how did you not put those together, Ollivander? Which makes you just kind of think how obscure this sort of cult following for the Hallows is, right? I mean, you think about Luna's dad being a well-known scholar of this topic, and that people thought that mark belonged to Grindelwald, right? There's so many things here that it's one of those times where I think Harry and Hermione being outside the wizarding world and not influenced by so much of its history, they're able to put that together. And us as readers, obviously, we don't live within the wizarding world, unfortunately. You know, we're all able to connect those dots a little bit more easily because we're not sort of biased of any sort of
right.
historical knowledge or upbringing in this environment. Which is really where that diversity of thought is so important.
It's interesting then when he tells Ron and Hermione, you know, everything that he knows, which is, you know, that Gregorovitch had the Elder Wand and that Grindelwald had tracked him down and taken it from him, especially since he had been...
The man out the window.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? He's the one who climbed out the window.
Which is, you know, makes sense because, of course... Grigorovich had been stupid enough to spread the rumor that he had it, and Grindelwald had that Elder Wand and became, of course, extremely powerful, and that's when, you know, Dumbledore finally knew he was the one who could stop him, steps in, duels him, wins the wand, and that it had been Dumbledore who had had the wand all of these years, and that this is exactly where it is now, which is at Hogwarts with Dumbledore in his final resting place. And that is exactly where Voldemort is right now as he's taking the wand. And Ron and Hermione are just flabbergasted that he hasn't gone for it. And he tells them, I'm not supposed to have them. I'm supposed to get the Horcruxes. That's my mission. And that's where the belief that he has led him to have these conversations in the way that he has. And it's hard for them to believe, but Harry is absolutely certain that at this point that he is making the right decision.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he explains it, and Ron is not terribly surprisingly, but is the most like, are you sure, man? Like, you could have the most powerful wand. You could become the most powerful wizard ever. Are you sure you want to give that up for this other thing? And, you know, this is where that laser focus that Harry has on his mission and his objective. You know what? No, I don't want it. I was never meant to have it. If I was meant to have it, I would have it, basically, right? And then we sort of get Harry letting Voldemort back in, or kind of going to Voldemort again at the end of the chapter here. And it doesn't really matter if he wanted to go get it. It's too late.
Yeah. Yeah, he has it. You know, he peels open the tomb unceremoniously, and he takes the wand, and now he feels as though he is finally the master, and this leaves us in a really interesting place because we know that now the Trinity has a plan, and they want to get into Gringotts because they believe that there is a Horcrux there, and their plan is now to destroy those, as you know, all the Horcruxes. And so this is really how the rest of this is going to play out. And I'm excited to get there, as next week we'll spend a little more time at Shell Cottage, but that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah, and I do love that it's sort of like, I feel a little bit like the trio's about to like hit their insanity button, like they're about to crank it up to level crazy. Like they don't really know. They're just hitting it hard and going for it. You know, they don't necessarily, like we've talked about, they don't know what they're looking for there. They don't know if there's any more. You know, they might lose the sword, but you know what? They're just going to head down, charge in, do what they need to do. And I feel like it's almost, they've almost sort of changed roles, right? Like Voldemort has been sort of wreaking and sowing chaos throughout the countryside and the world lately, and they've been very quiet and methodical and, you know, in the background, and now they're almost going to kind of switch, right? He, you know, Voldemort's been methodically hunting this wand. He kind of has it now and is going to make next strategic steps, and the trio is just sort of, you know, let's just go. Let's go crazy. They're, you know, the next couple chapters, I think we really see them go almost berserker on everything, and it's exciting and a little reckless, but it's just showing you the sort of place we're at. Like, we're amped, right? Like, we're getting to that crux, that precipice that we're going to jump off before this whole thing ends.
Yeah,
because like you mentioned, we don't have many chapters left to wrap up the story, the entire series story. So
yeah, it is. I mean, the tension is definitely ratcheted up now, and we are in the last section of the book for sure. And I love it. I'm so excited. And so, Drea, though, if anybody wants to, you know, catch up with you as we have to end this week and we look eagerly anticipate next week, where can everybody find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on pretty much any of the social media platforms under MattRushing02. So just search for my name. You'll find me if I'm there. You can also find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. It's so much fun. And I'm on the TFM network doing a few shows. One is called The 602 Club, which is our general geek show that you can also follow on Twitter there over at The 602 Club. On Twitter, we're talking about all of the fandoms we love, not just one. So check that out. It's a lot of fun. You can find me doing Literary Treks as well as The Orb there. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.